As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Plus minus.
Curry, way downtown! Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit then.
Plus minus.
Driving again. Tell Marcus that he asked that question about my defense. You hear that, Marcus?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night.
I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Hello and welcome. I'm going to call this a Warriors All 82, privately, but I know it is a Warriors plus minus, but I'm in the press room right now. It kind of feels a little bit All 82 to me. And I'm leading it too,
He brought your microphone to the arena. Very nice, Slater.
Brought my microphone to the Bay Area is what I did.
He always got his mic with him.
Hell yeah, everywhere I go.
My producer gets mad at me when TK show because I don't do that ever. But the whole, we're on a side track here, started off poorly, but sort of like the Warriors. We're getting a little sidetracked.
Yeah, they went down 10 to the Magic yesterday. So this is us down 10. They ended up winning by 30. I believe, Daryl Arata, the terrific stats guy for the Warriors, sent out this stat. I didn't even use it, but tonight, meaning last night, was the first time the Warriors trailed by as many as 10 and won by at least 30 since 1997-98. Kind of interesting.
The great year of Warriors basketball, 97-98. Weren't they in San Jose then?
I think that's true. Yeah, I think they won a championship that year, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
The San Jose Warriors, baby.
I'm surprised they didn't do that in one of the Durant years, because didn't that feel like a Durant year? Just kind of go through the motions in the first quarter. They know they're going to be...
No, that team got down 10 and just was like, what are we doing?
Let's go home. No, not the Durant teams. And just like, okay, you know what? Let's just win by 40. Down 15 in the first... I just felt like that. Maybe I'm wrong. This is the first game where I felt like the Warriors knew they were going to win. They knew they were tons better. Obviously, it's Orlando. But they just said, okay, we're going to be a little slow, a little, not great in the first quarter, and it doesn't matter because they're just that much better. And yes, they were. They just felt like that. The rush of this beginning and a couple of bad games, but it was all still in the kind of the excitement of the beginning of the season. They got this new energy. They feel great. Steph and Draymond still feel great. This didn't feel like that. This felt like, let's just roll the ball out and we're going to win by 30 at some point, some way.
I think that the 30 part of the 10 to 30 makes it – I am surprised that the Durant teams never did it. But I can remember a game in Philly, they were going into the third quarter down 20, and then they were leaving the third quarter up 20. But I think they ended up winning that game by probably 25 points or something like that. It was the 30 aspect. What about last night? I mean, I don't know. To me, it's the three-point shooting of Wiggins and Steph. I mean, they combined to hit 15. Wiggins, 8 of 10. He's now shooting 41.6% on the season, and he actually started pretty cold. And then obviously Steph with the record. What stands out to you guys?
It's got to be how clear it is Steph wants to get this done.
Is he going to do it? He needs 15, right?
I think he's going to try. I think if he makes four in the first quarter, he's going to go.
I think
for
he
it.
Needs more than four in the first quarter.
No, if he makes four, he's going to go for it. I'm just saying, he still may not get it, but if he's feeling good early, I think he's gonna go for it. Like,
if I don't know. Portland's such a great perimeter defensive team, so I just don't see that.
And no Dame.
I mean, I'm gonna say something that might upset Marcus about Damian Lillard. Portland's a worse team, obviously, with Damian Lillard, but actually they played the other night against the Clippers, and without Lillard, Billups has had them playing kind of more of like a grind it style. I actually think they're better defensively, as bad as they are, you know, in this current state. So I don't know. I'm just saying. It might be even easier for Steph to actually hit that amount of threes if Lillard was out there, who would also be keeping.
I think it'd be harder now. In the game too, because Lillard could shoot Portland into, you know, competitiveness. What he doesn't, does he need 16 to break? Is that what it is?
He needs 16
that's a lot. And the record's 15, right? Clay's 15 is the record, I think.
Clay is 14, so 15 needs to break that record.
We need Bob Beam in here. We've all seen, like, that. I know Marcus and I flash back to
4 a quarter, man. That's it. 4 quarters later. What are we talking about?
He needed to get 8 to get 400 at the last game of 15-16. And he got, like, 8. And what was Marcus? It was, like, 8 in the first quarter. Yeah, 10. It was 8 in the first quarter. Like, it was immediately. Like, can he do it? Can he do it? Because back then, it was, like, Steph did not get that. You know, it wasn't like that. And it's just boom, boom, boom. Yeah, it's like boom, 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 boom. He's got it. And then he gets 10, ends up at 402. Now, 16 is a different thing. He's going to,
That's 48 points all on threes.
Yeah, it's a lot. I thought he needed 2 or 3 more last night. And I think Steph thought that because he was clearly jacking him up at the end of the game. He needed a couple more. You get in that 11-12 range, which very few people have ever done, but obviously Steph can do it. Then I think it's much more reasonable. Of course, we're saying this. It's not reasonable. Probably can't do it. And what's he going to? He's going to get 6 in the first quarter, and it's going to be live the whole game.
Yeah, it's not reasonable. It's possible, though. Like, it shouldn't be something to be expected. But, like he has to be hot to get 16 threes. It can't
I would
be.
Hope so.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it can't be like, yo, I'm going to take 45 to get 16. Like, he's not going to do that, right? So, he's got to be feeling it. It's got to be like, you know, in a zone type deal.
It's possible enough that anyone who may have a story that needs to be ready in time has to go into the night knowing, like, gosh, is there a chance I might have to get this out?
That person is under the gun right now. Right now.
I feel like I'm being thoroughly trolled here.
Just saying, that's an example of how, like, it's probably not possible, but just that 1% chance.
Theoretically, you wouldn't want not to be ready to push the button on that story. This is probably the way we're talking about here.
You know, that's like, you know what? I was pissed at Steph for that. Like, dude, either get 10 or get 4. Like, 7 is right there. Like, where I could call and be like, hey, all right, this thing is going longer. Like, I got more time. But, you know, not really. Like, you can't be too confident. Like, come on, man. You know where he blew it? It's that Phoenix game. 4 for 21 that Phoenix game. 2 more threes there. Couple.
He was taking them. He was taking them. He tried. Come on now. He was trying. He didn't. You could tell. He knew.
I'm just saying, like, last night was cold blooded, man. 7 was like the worst number. It's literally on the cusp.
I get wanting to do it at home, but, I mean, if he does it in MSG, which, like, to me, this is lining up for probably Indianapolis or MSG against the Knicks. Like, MSG would be cool.
MSG would be cool. I think he'd be good there.
I think Philly would be cool, too, because he gets to do it with his brother. That would be a
ABC Saturday moment, night,
right?
Too.
Do it on his brother. His brother guarding him and just rise up right in his face. And
and it'll be just like they began in the backyard.
Oh, Marcus, you know, is writing, like, the story now.
Full
Marcus
circle.
Is writing
Let's
the
go.
Story
Let's go. I'm already barring this up.
But it's Steph. We've seen him do this. We know he hit these.
Why does Indiana feel like such a bad place, though? Like, Indiana's like the
birthplace of basketball.
You know,
yeah, Reggie,
here, you know?
Yeah.
Jimmy Chitwood.
Larry Bird will be sitting there at half court ready to give him a handshake.
One thing we know, he wanted to do it. He wanted to set it up so he could do it tomorrow. And it might not happen, but he clearly, last few games, you could tell he wanted to do it. And usually he gets what he wants. We'll see. But I thought Wiggins was the story. I thought the smile, I mean, other people have talked about it, just like the guy's beaming. He's just so happy. To be playing this well, to be on this team that accepts him, that embraces everything that he does, that doesn't look, you know, negatively on the stuff that he doesn't always do. And he's just playing relaxed, confident basketball. Again, it's Orlando Magic, whatever, but he's been playing really well most of the season after that first kind of stumble early on. But man, when he's out there, they're better. And that's, you know, an impressive thing for a 20-4 team. They have Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and everybody else. They're better when Andrew Wiggins is out there. And, of course, when he goes, you know, inflammatory like he did last night, it's just you can't beat the Warriors when he's like that.
It's especially that smile and the oh-so-obvious, like, happiness, you know, like, just he's kind of reached this new level of, like, peace or whatever. It's especially jarring considering how the season began, right? Like, in the throes of NBA controversy, he never looked more uncomfortable, right? Like, and to see him get from that point where he's, like, you know, basically lashing out at people to now this, like, kind of new level of, you know, or at least expressing the joy. I don't know what he's actually felt, but he's expressing a level of joy that we just hadn't seen from him. That's pretty jarring because it was just a couple months ago. He was under fire.
It does tell you that the Warriors played this right. You know, I mean, obviously they were quietly pressuring him to take the shot, obviously because they want him to play for them. You know, they supported him. Like, they supported him through this.
I would say, you know, again, it's our job to go get information, but he didn't like how it got out to the public.
They did let it be known. Now, I'm saying more the players.
Draymond and Iguodala.
Yeah, this did not come from the players, right? This did not. It came from other sources. And that part, I'm not saying. I'm saying within the context of just that media day, just what those players said, and then Draymond a few days later. They weren't pushing him, and they really weren't in that. They were embracing his opportunity to think through this. They certainly wanted him to take the shot and be eligible to play home games, but it was understanding within that. We know Andrew will do what's right for the team, but we also understand that he's got to think through this. That combination, it's not that hard to do. I'm not saying this, you know, Nobel Peace Prize for doing this. But it was the right tone, and we've seen teams and players not do it this way, especially around Wiggins, right? I mean, we've seen him not be a real popular player. I mean, a popular player, but not, like, beloved, like, say, in the Timberwolves locker room. I don't think Karl-Anthony Towns loved playing with Andrew Wiggins. I think this team, this Warriors group, really likes playing with Wiggins, and that translates to him loving to play.
He mentioned a couple times post-game last night, he was just like, winning is fun. I like to win. And, you know, look, it's simple. We've talked about it in the past, but he just never has been on a winning team. And you guys know the NBA, like, losing seasons are miserable seasons. It's hard to play within them. Sure, you might have a couple happy games. Wiggins scores 42 against the, you know, Thunder or the Cavaliers back in Minnesota, and I'm sure he had a happy press conference, you know, dropped within those miserable seasons. But in general, it was never fun to play in Minnesota because it was always coaching changes and, you know, organizational upheaval and, you know, why aren't you as good as we hoped you'd be, number one pick. Then he comes to the Warriors. He's on the 15-50 season. Whatever. That obviously wasn't a joyous environment. And even last season, look, they made the 8th seed. They had the 15-5 finish. But in general, you guys were around. That was not a pleasant season in the middle of a pandemic. No fans. They're an 8th seed. I mean, he had some nice moments. But this is a level of winning that just brings – I mean, think about –
Stop giving away my story, dude.
How many stories are you working on, MT? Jeez.
Well, Wiggins got put on the back burner for
because of the 30. Yeah, 30 tends to move things around.
Wiggins, like, this is an entire, to me, an organization that is just much happier in general. Like, the Wiggins smile is indicative of everyone around. I mean, they're 20-4. I mean, Steve Kerr's talked about it, but it's just they're just happier because they're winning, and that's sports, right?
Well, it works, and the roster works this season. It didn't last season. I mean, they made some experiments. They brought some guys in. I don't think any of us said, hey, Kelly Oubre would be a terrible addition. We're like, okay, let's see. Or Brad Wanamaker, you know. I thought actually that might work because he seemed to be a nice Steve Kerr backup point guard. He was terrible. Like, there's just certain – Eric Paschal didn't work. There's players that did not work last season. And I don't know that it affected Wiggins, but it affected how good the team was. And that affects Wiggins' mood. It affects the whole team's mood. But they just got pieces in here. And none of them, you know, I guess we can say Otto Porter's been playing very well, but he's not been incredible. Bielitsa's been up and down. They have some different things. But they just got things that work around what they do. And that makes everybody happier. And that leads to 20. You know, it could lead to like 62-20, wherever the hell they're going to end up. and that makes everybody happier. It's just the pieces fit, and they had, I think they had some frustrated players last season.
62,
whatever,
74,
yeah, 74, 76, whatever the hell they're going to be. You know, I don't know that the Oubre stuff. We wrote about the Oubre stuff a ton.
Hey, hey, no Oubre slander. Do you see what he's doing? Yeah, in Charlotte?
I'm saying I don't want to. I'm like
saving Charlotte.
It wasn't that big a deal. Like, you know, in the context of NBA frustration, it was barely a blip. It just wasn't a player who didn't fit. I don't think Oubre was a bad guy. I don't think Oubre was consciously trying to screw things up. He just didn't fit. It happens all the time. And you move him off and you bring in other players who do fit, and you have the growth of Jordan Poole, and you have JTA playing really well, and Gary Payton out of nowhere providing incredible, you know, production and defense. This fits around everything they do. That's why the mood's better. And I think where the smile from Andrew Wiggins is, you know, reflective of, yeah, as I think MT, you were saying, just the overall team feeling good, and he's just right in there with it.
Now who's writing columns on Warriors Plus Minus?
I write this a million. Like, I feel like I'm rewriting everything, but that's what we are feeling. It's fine. You want to continue to tell a story of what's going on. But, you know, it's Orlando. Hey, is Orlando, every time they play the Warriors, every player's hurt? Like, every time they play Orlando, their good players are hurt. I don't know when Jonathan Isaac plays anymore. Like, it's unbelievable. But that's what happens in bad situations. Like, players get hurt. They don't play. And nothing looks good.
Remember, that used to be the Warriors.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great point. Like, this is what happens when you have a kind of a group that the chemistry isn't right and the breaks don't go
anywhere.
Was that
you guys giving me a James Wiseman segue right there? Is that what that was?
Yeah. Who might the Warriors have in that situation? Who's set up in a weird way for the Warriors? Do you think, hey, you wrote
who's
about
the Jonathan Isaac of the Warriors? Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Slater, I'm pretty sure you're the one who got Kerr to talk about this. This is my guess. This is just knowing how that room works. I believe that's right. And do you think Kerr basically suggesting or telling you guys that Wiseman's not going to play till January at least is like a big deal, or is it something you kind of?
I don't think it was a big deal.
Answer?
I mean, I asked it in a way that my question was. The fact that, because he had said James still not scrimmaging. And I mean, it was another of the non-update, like he's still not cleared. And it was like, you know, it's December 6th. So I was like, does this change your expectations for what he can be for you this season? Because it seems pretty clear at this point, he's not really going to be able to play till 2021. I was the first person that brought up, or until 2022, I brought it up. Like, look, it's clearly not playing until next year, calendar year at this point. He kind of confirmed without confirming, saying essentially you do the math, he's not scrimmaging, it's December 6th.
They're going on a long road.
It's
trip.
Pretty unrealistic, yeah, to think he'd be back before, you know, January 1st. But in general, my wrapped into the question is, I mean, we can go back to our previous podcast, we can go back to the summer, we can go back to some of their messaging, which I did in the story I wrote, but like there was kind of an expectation of it was Wiseman before Clay, it was Wiseman maybe in December, we'd see him early December back into a team that we didn't think was going to be 20-4 and feeling fully formed and like ready to put Klay Thompson in and like fully form into this one seed Goliath. We thought Wiseman was going to get some easing time into it. And the fact that he's probably coming back after Klay, he's coming back to a team that has formed an identity playing very un-Wiseman like, right? Small ball, read and react, fast, best defense in the basketball, because of the way, you know, Draymond kind of conducts the defense back there. It's just seeming more and more like he doesn't fit this season. You know, look, it's year two. I understand the patient approach with him, but it's, you know, again, we've talked about it weekly on this podcast. It's just with everything else going correctly for them, that is the one thing that is just not going in a positive direction.
I still think he may not fit this regular season, but I still think they need whoever they expect James Wiseman to be. Even if they don't win a title this year, they're going to need him next year, which means they need him playing this year. Look at who you got to get through in the West. Potentially the Lakers, potentially Denver, potentially, obviously, you know, Phoenix is shaping up to be a Western Conference Finals setup. Like, you just can't go into this gauntlet with Draymond and Looney. They are going to need him to get to where they want to go.
Are we sure about that, though?
I think you are.
I think against Phoenix. Yeah, maybe.
You watch, how was Draymond the day after battling with DeAndre Ayton? Like, he wasn't. Like, it takes a lot out of him.
This is the bigger, wider scope question, though. do you think Wiseman, who at this point, like, he has not been able to play basketball for 6 months, they wouldn't let him do anything on his knee. Obviously, now he's easing back. He still hasn't been clear for fives. We saw what he was last year. Immensely talented, but it's very raw. There's not a belief that it's yet a winning center. When you're talking about playoffs, like, you're talking about winning basketball at the highest stage. And there's no way to know if James Wiseman will be ready for that. Maybe by May he is. But the fact is, they need to know if they need to restructure this roster by February, going in with that mindset of like, hey, Draymond and Looney might not work, but is there a veteran center who we need to add to the mix? Like, and the closer we get to February, the more and more like Wiseman has not been able to even exhibit on a G League stage, like where his game is at. And the fact that all they say behind the scenes, like, we need to be extremely patient with everything they see from him. I think it's unfair to sit here and talk like he's going to be the answer against DeAndre Ayton in the playoffs. And then if you don't think Looney and Draymond could get it done, you know, according to Shams and Bob Kravitz, they just said that the Pacers are in sell mode. Do you need to start talking trade? If
I don't think they're doing that.
I don't
that.
Either, I don't, but, I don't but you know what I mean? Yeah.
I think they kind of knew some of this going into the season, and they didn't add another center. They added Gary Payton the second. Like they've kind of made this calculation without even knowing they were going to be in 20-4. I kept saying they need a third center, right? I mean, they need a third center. They have, like, I just don't believe in Looney over the long term, as I made clear, but he's done it. I thought Marquise Chris would have been perfect to have on this roster. They did not think so. They think they're fine with what they got. They think that JTA is their third center, and maybe Kuminga down the road is like, and Wiseman's a bonus. I think they think of Wiseman as a bonus. If they get him up to speed for the playoffs, then you've got that bonus thing, but they're going to go small anyway. So if they don't get them up to speed, they aren't losing very much, if anything. They've gone into this again. Remember, we were talking like, could he be the starter this season? And I was very clear, he is not going to start this season. I really believe that from the moment he had that surgery, like, he is not the starter. Kevon Looney's the starter. Draymond Green is going to play the second most minutes at center. Then they sign Bielitsa. Then they have all these other things that they could do, but I think they're fine with the way, even before 20-4, they were fine with it. Okay, maybe Wiseman plays some this season significantly. Plays some, maybe it's significant. If not, I think they're cool with it. I think they're all right, and I just don't see them moving pieces around because they're not adding a major salary. That's what I see the whole Miles Turner thing. I get it. I get the idea of it. They are not adding a major salary. If they did, they would have to trade Andrew Wiggins to do it, and they are not trading Andrew Wiggins. That is not happening. So that's why I think they're just fine rolling with what they have, understanding that Wiseman might not be significant in February, which means not for March, which might mean not for April, which might mean not for May. But there's a chance that he is. And beyond that, even if he isn't, they've got, in their minds, they can go. So they went 15-5 with no.
They're 20-4 right now.
Yeah, exactly. So they're just not. I just don't think they're too worried about it. I would have been more worried about it than them going into the season. They decided not to, and it's worked out just fine. And they can go JTA. They can go Otto freaking Porter. Like they feel like they can just piece this in today's NBA, and it hurts them maybe against one team. Phoenix Suns. Now, that might be the team you don't want to be hurt against at the very end, but they also feel they've got some other guys. And again, Kuminga could play center for them. Like, there's guys who could play center for them in their minds. Again, their minds, maybe not so much our minds, but it's worked out just fine for them.
But I also think he doesn't have to be the savior against DeAndre Ayton or them. It's just another piece. It's another option. It's 10 minutes, 15 minutes where Draymond doesn't have to give everything he's got. And even though I don't think it's the difference between beating Denver, you don't want Draymond guarding Jokic for 40 minutes for six games.
And then going to the next series and having to do the same thing against Rudy Gobert. And then going to the next series and have to, the accumulation.
The bar is lowered for Wiseman. That's clear. If he goes this season and give him nothing, that's a crushing reality. Right now, you got 2 years, and they end up in the same situation that Looney was in, right? Where it's like, we don't even know if this is like what he's got. But I do think to have James Wiseman be a role player on this team, be a big they can turn to, be another option. If the bar is lowered to where you're not expecting him to be like an all-world center or whatever, then to me that should be pretty easy to expect him to be a JaVale McGee type. I do think you're right in that when you watch Kuminga, man, like you watch Kuminga, it's just like, yo, he's so physical. Like I wouldn't mind putting him behind some of these dudes.
I'd play him every game. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. I mean, and you accept the mistakes, and you don't, if he jacks up a three, you don't take him out of the rotation for a week, and that's what Kerr did. I get it. He's coaching him. He's trying to coach him to be able to trust him in big minutes. I would play him.
Kuminga then went down to the G League and took about 9 threes every game. But
yeah, exactly.
And completely played like the wrong way.
Yeah, exactly. I don't quite know what you get out of going put him down the G League. I don't think he's a 20-minute a game guy. And sometimes he might be a 4-minute a game guy. But Jesus, the stuff that he does is the stuff that they need. I keep saying it. Go get twos. Go find a two against a tough defense that's overplaying everybody else. Fight your way through somebody and get to the rim. Get fouled. Let's see if he makes his foul shots at this point. Not so great.
Or just be aggressive and athletic and physical like San Antonio was against you. You needed somebody to kind of combat that, right?
That one I still never. Like, that was the perfect shot at the Kuminga game. There couldn't have been a better one, and they don't have
They just have threw a bunch of young athletes out there just ran the Warriors to death. And it's like, hey, do you have any young athletes? Oh, they're all at Santa Cruz.
I would
have
said, Jonathan Kuminga, you're going to play 25 minutes in this game. I don't care how it goes. You're playing 25 minutes in this game. Moses Moody, you're playing 15, and we'll see how it goes. You might play 30 because this is not a game that, we want Draymond, Steph, Otto Porter, all these guys having to run back him down after beating Phoenix the night before. They chose not to go that way. They have their own reasons. I went into that thinking this should have been a Kuminga game. It should have been. He should play every game. That game he should have played.
It's an interesting balance that they are striking and are really going to have to strike potentially even by the play or in the playoffs, where they're built as this like high IQ veteran team. Doesn't make mistakes. Knows their defensive rotations. I mean, they still got a defensive rating under 100 right now. But against Phoenix, like you said, or, against the Spurs the other night, but really against Phoenix, like you saw that lack of height, that lack of burst, that lack of ability to get tough twos when a team is switching and you need to beat a man. So then, the answer could be Kuminga, could be Wiseman once he gets back healthy. But at the same time, like that does chip away at what they are building, right? Because, you put either of those two on the floor, it's two defensive mistakes. It's an empty possession where Kuminga doesn't know, when he's supposed to pin down for Steph. And then it's a frustrated Kerr over there going like, we're winning by executing every single possession turnover better than you.
By the way, just as empty as Steph throwing the ball away.
Did you see Steve's face when JTA made that turnover at the end of the quarter? Oh my God, that's as mad as, again, this is just a sideline shot, so I don't know. They don't show them all the time, but that is as mad as I think Steve's been all season.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife, Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men, defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
I saw him last night. He was punching into his hand like whap, 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 whap after a few timeouts. And he
that series where like they could run out the clock and ended up giving up two buckets in the final.
Steph gets, I don't know what happened. Steph got picked on an inbounds pass.
And I was just like, yeah. Are you serious? Like that gives a coach a pulmonary embolism, right? Like,
yes,
you've got the ball. You could run out the clock and to get the last shot. They gave up two more buckets.
When they were playing that afternoon game in LA against the Clippers, which you kind of thought going in might be a sleepy one, he was like lit up on the sideline. Like calls were infuriating him, like big threes. He's fist pumping. He's pointing down to Mike Brown after a defensive stop. Like it's just, you didn't see this energy out of him last year.
Well, he thinks they can win. He thinks they can win a championship. This is clearly, and he needs a
coach. Doesn't that change everything, TK?
Absolutely. Like, absolutely. That
changes everything.
Absolutely. And that's
last
great.
Year, he clearly didn't think they could.
Yeah, well, I don't know who did. I don't know who did, but, you see what drives him crazy. You know, it was just kind of randomly, like JT makes that turnover. That's who Steve was mad at mostly because it was that decision that kind of caused the chain reaction. He doesn't play again for a long time. Bielitsa blows a clear switch, right? Steve calls a timeout, forgets he doesn't switch out on somebody, three-pointer. I think it was Terrence Ross, one of my favorite players, of course. Steve calls timeout, but he leaves Bielitsa in the game, and he plays him for like 8 straight more minutes. Like he gets mad at defensive stuff, and we know he makes decisions based on, but like he gets infuriated at bad turnovers. Like that's what drives him crazy. Kuminga can play great defense. If he jacks up a bad three and makes a turnover, he's not playing again. Like that's
it's what he said, right? Yeah. He doesn't turn the ball over. He doesn't turn the ball over. It's like what he kept saying about Kuminga.
Steve coaches to turnovers. He does rotations to defense, but he coaches the turnovers. That's how I feel like.
What's interesting to think about, and you know, this San Antonio game to me was a obvious rest game. I mean, TK, you were calling the L way before.
It was an L.
But I'm starting to think about like Steph has played 23 of 24 games, and he hasn't played more than 70 games. He hasn't played 70 games in the season since Durant's first year. I don't know that they don't, but they've got to have 10 games set aside for him to rest, right? They're not going to play him 70. He's on pace to play about 78 games. I don't even know why you would do that. Am I tripping and thinking, like, you got to factor in Steph won't play 10 games. Last year, he played 63 out of 72, and it cost him the season.
They might figure there. What if he gets, you know, he might get a minor injury and he misses.
They're just like banking on a little ankle sprain, giving him 5 games.
What you don't want to do is start resting him, lose some games, and then he gets hurt. What I'm saying, right? I mean, I can see how they're thinking. Like, let's get that number one seed, and then when Steph maybe tweaks an ankle or whatever, then
when he falls on falls on his tailbone,
exactly. You don't want to like set yourself up for 1-4 when that happens, and meanwhile be losing games along the way when he's not playing. But I see like a back to back like. Indiana Knicks is back to back. Maybe you don't play him against Indiana and you play him against the Knicks.
I think he's going to play both those. But the backside of it is a Boston Toronto back to back. I know he'll probably want to play in Toronto, but that is the.
He'll definitely.
You know,
play
they did
Toronto.
The 4-game road trip, and the last game of the 4-game road trip was in Detroit. That's the one they did rest him this year. And they actually stole that win in Detroit, which was, you know, that was one of their bigger wins of the season because they did the risky move to rest a bunch. But they did that partly because his hip really was hurting.
Yeah, he did get
his hip was hurting
bit, right?
From Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I just think they're at a point early in the season and, you know, we were talking about Steve Kerr's approach earlier. They're in like gobble up as many wins as possible mode. Like there's not this, you know, let's play the marathon of the season. And I remember the Detroit game pregame. So they're resting Steph, they're resting Draymond, they're resting Otto Porter. But Steve comes in and you expect him to be, you know, oh, this would be fun. This would be good for the young guys. This might be a nice developmental night. He was even asked that way. And he was like, no, I want to win. If I think Kuminga can help in a rotational win, he'll play. If not, he won't. Like we're coming out here to win. And I do think there's that general vibe right now that just that like no, they're not going to talk about like resting Steph if he doesn't exactly need to. If that needs to happen later in the season, it does. But like you said, like they, you know, they weren't planning to rest him last year. Then he just fell on a steel stair and cracked his tailbone. That's why he missed those games.
It's a very risky proposition.
Let him get the record, then I think they really will start thinking about it. But I think they're factoring in that they don't need to do. They don't need to do this, and because you know, let's see him get through 50 games, and then they start thinking about
but,
it.
But last year, you were fighting for a playoff spot. The season was ended in May, no matter how you cut it. Like banking, like they've got to be looking at this now. Like they could play into June. I just don't understand the value of him playing 78 games. I just don't.
No, he's not playing 78. He's not playing 78 games. I mean, they get to
that means
point,
he's yeah. got. That means a chunk is coming.
Where I think it's later in the season though. Once they've they have better establishment of a top two seed. You know, maybe he's gotten a bunch of games with Clay. There'll probably be some like more of those like mass rest nights later in the year where it's like you know Clay's out, Steph's out, Draymond's out. You know, it is what you saw in Detroit.
And I agree with that, but also like if they choose to do it, if Clay is going well, they can rest Steph and know they've got Clay. Like I think that would be a little more comfortable.
Another reason you need Wiseman, right? Because Draymond is in the same boat.
Draymond, same like, thing. You know, I don't know. Is Andre going
to
play again?
Andre's supposed to return on the road trip. I actually heard he was in a scrimmage recently with Clay.
I might not play Andre. Like Andre, you tell me when you're ready to play. Like,
I mean, I think they've already done that. I mean, he has a little bit of a swollen knee on the road trip, and he's missed 10 games now. So I think they.
Yeah, Andre, you pick 24 more games that you want to play.
You tell me the games you want to play. Let me know.
Like I'm looking late in the season. They have a 5-game road trip in late March. Orlando, Miami is a back to back, and Wizards. Memphis is a back-to-back. Like you can almost pencil in like March 28th at Memphis after playing in DC the night before at the end of a 5-game road trip. Like that is Jordan Poole's night.
What if you are in a battle for
You better have gotten that Spurs win early in the season, which you actually didn't get, but you know what I mean? Like
but that's
20-4 Slater. They're 20-4.
Yeah, they're 20-4.
Come on now.
They got the one seed right now.
They're tied.
Well, tied for it, but you start doing that, next thing you know, you're in a fight for the – unless you're a clear number one or clear number two. It's just a risky – to me, it just feels risky when you could have just had this mapped out. If – just say they've played a quarter of the games. Steph has missed one. If they had sat him two other games just by plan, I mean, is it that much worse?
18-6. They're scrambling. It's terrible. And Marcus has more time to write that 3-point piece. That's what you're saying. You're just mad.
That's what it's all about, yo. Like, this is supposed to happen late December. Like, this. That's what I'm pissed about, TK.
This whole, I can see it. I know you so goodness. Well. It's all like, what happened? I shouldn't be writing.
Why haven't you rested this dude? Why is he playing 23 of the first 24 games?
Marcus wants rest. You got to rest Marcus.
I just think they're back after 2 years of away from the spotlight.
That is a huge part of it, right?
They
want
to play great. They want to play great.
He just wants to play every night, and he feels healthy. The only game, like I said, the only game he sat his hip was legitimately hurting. I just think he wants to play.
They want Chase and Aurora.
Where's the level head guy who can, you know, sit down?
He wants him to win. He wants him to win games. What are you talking about?
They want especially in Chase.
Yeah, they want the energy back. They're beginning to get it. And I wasn't there for the last two, but the Phoenix game was, I mean, it was a Warrior crowd. It wasn't a classic Warrior crowd, but it was a good Warrior crowd. And I think they're beginning, like, they want the noise the whole time. They want people in their seats. They want people to be on, you know, ready to ooh and ah when the threes go up. It's just, they want this energy, and they're kind of pushing. Now we'll see, you know, they're chasing wins. We'll see what they feel like end of January, beginning of February. But I'm not surprised they're playing Steph so much, but I do think at some point they will back off. But they also, you know, again, if you start backing off on him now and something tweaks and he misses eight games, you're going to, man, it would have been nice to build up those wins. It would be nice to be 27-6 at that point instead of, you know, 20-14. So that's all.
Or just do the 2-week off thing. Do the LeBron. Be like, all right, we're off 2 weeks.
Shaq used to do that in January. It was like, you just write it down. Shaq's going to have a little bit of a problem in January, and he'll be back in February. And there he was, like, dressed back for the All-Star game. And then the Lakers take their big run down the stretch. It's a luxury for the Warriors to be in. Like, they didn't expect to be like this. Like, these are good things for them to be like, hey, let's plot our way to the number one seed. It's not, again, where they've been for the last few years. So I just think all these things, they just like feeling this stuff. They like feeling how they are. They're at the top of their game again. They didn't know that they were going to be like this. They've got guys coming back. Like, we're not even talking about Clay. Like, you know, the Clay thing could blow up and they could be like just not never lose again. There could be all kinds of results from this. They love it though. They love this moment in time. It's a good moment.
I do look forward to how this all shakes out. Some of these guys, like when GP2 comes off the court, it's like, why is he why is he off the court? Like JTA comes in the games, and even when it's bad, like, you know, he's on the court, right? Like, it's going to be really interesting. to see how this is all managed, right? Because some of these guys are like, they're great gear changes. Like, they're excellent to shift the tempo of the game. And, like, I don't know, where's Clay? Clay's minutes are set, right? This is set. You may never see some of these dudes again. Like, it's wild, because how do you tell these guys they can't play after they got you 25, 30 wins, right? Like, it's just wild. There was a moment last game where he takes GP2 off, and then it was like a terrible defensive breakdown, and there's a timeout, and he's back on the court again. It's like, he's like, my bad, I shouldn't have took you out. It's just, I want to see how this is going to be managed. Like, then the Kuminga factor, like, this dude needs to be on the court.
And Wiseman, and Andre hasn't played.
This might be a lot. This might be a lot,
yeah,
yo.
Yeah.
It might be a lot.
There's going to be inactive good players. That's the point. I mean, Chiosa has to get his minutes. We know that. I mean, how is that possible that he's not going to get his minutes? So, like, they've got...
He may never see the floor again.
They might have to do platoons. So what I'm thinking is, like, you just might have to sit two guys who should play because you have to sit two guys. And it might be Damian Lee and JTA one game. It might be GP2 and, you know, I don't even know who it would be, Porter or whatever. Like, you just might have to go, yeah, be elite. You might just have to say, this game, you're two good players and you can't help us, but you're not playing because we need to get these other guys their minutes and you will play the next game. You're going to have like eight core guys, and I can't even tell you who the eight core guys would be, but we can guess at it. And then everyone else might go in platoons because you can't just play 15 guys. Like, you literally can't play 15 guys, and they've got 15 guys who can play. So, and you can be very liberal with the rest, as they obviously are being with Andre right now, and can be with others.
If you feel anything, you're done. Like, hey, yes, my knees are hot. 2 weeks out.
Down three, game three. Yeah, you're done. But yeah, you start talking about playoff rotation, it gets really tricky. But again, it's a good problem to have. It's like, you want to, it's like, geez, GP2 should be playing 15 minutes, but we're only going to play him 9. Like, and in a minute, he might earn 12, and that's it. But that's a great position to be in, because then you just have options. You can just throw guys at you know, the best scorers on another team. You can just keep throwing guys at them, and that's how they won in the past, because they just had all, you had Livingston, then you had Andre, then you had Draymond, then you had, you know, you just keep throwing guys, Clay, you just keep throwing guys at James Harden. Eventually you're going to be better than James Harden.
Playoffs have a way of shaving down your rotation naturally, though, you know, and it's matchup dependent, and the Warriors have a bunch of different guys that I think will matter in different matchups. But look, I could see them playing in a quick series and suddenly be elites, so just like, oh, can't, you know, he's knocked from the rotation.
No question. That's the one I'm thinking of. Again, he does a lot of things that are interesting, but he messes up a lot too. That's just the nature of his game. And if you're trying to, like, play that playoff grinding defense, he might not be the guy you want doing it. We'll see who else they've got, but that's a guy that I would start with. Okay, he might be in and out of a playoff rotation. He's in the rotation now, but a playoff rotation, if you're trying to get more minutes for JTA or Kuminga or GP2 or all the other guys that we can tick off, it would be Bielitsa. I still think Jordan Poole could be in jeopardy of losing some minutes. He's in the rotation, but Clay's going to get some of those minutes. That's just, you have to have Clay get some of those minutes.
Don't you dare start taking from Jordan Poole.
He only played 22 minutes against San Antonio, and he was like a minus 26. Yeah.
Man, if he's going to play bad defense, and sometimes he still does, he's going to lose some minutes. I think he's very valuable. I'm not saying he's not valuable.
Sometimes you could just blow by him.
Oh, my God. Like, when you see a guy go right to the basket and you kind of go, how did that happen? You rewind, and usually it's Jordan Poole doing something that he just was slow to rotation or not up on the ball.
Doesn't he just remind you of early Clay? Like, sometimes, like, Clay used to just be like that. Sometimes be like, yo, Clay, what are you doing? Second year Clay?
Clay was always bigger, right? He was always bigger. Like, he could always, like, throw a hand up and kind of bother. And that's the thing. Jordan doesn't always do that. Again, it's a lot to ask.
It's more reverse, right? Like, Clay's problem wasn't on the ball, but he just, rotation. Yeah. He was terrible with it. And so he was good on ball. I do feel like Poole is better with the rotation and stuff, but man, on ball, like, it's just, and it doesn't have to be that way. It's clearly just a matter of him locking in. Like, he should be far more resistant than he is sometimes. And when he wants to be, he can. Like,
again, we're projecting. We don't really know. But when you start talking about Clay playing, let's say Clay's playing 28 minutes. That's 28 minutes that's going to. It's going to nudge into Jordan Poole, Damian Lee, GB2. Like, you can see the people.
It's going to nudge into Kevon Looney minutes, too.
I mean, you got Wiseman nudging into that, too. You got Kuminga that could be nudging into this. It's a formula that's going to be really complicated. It's probably going to change every game. But we're talking about playoff rotation. When you talk playoff rotation, there's some guys who are going to lose some minutes. And it's going to be mainly based on what they figure out to do with Clay, because Clay's going to play. Clay is going to play. That's the one sure thing I think we all know. If Clay's feeling good, he's going to play. And everyone else will have the ripple effect.
By the way, Slater, GP2, 41.7% from three as a Warrior.
As a warrior,
yeah. Wow. Dating back to last year, but yeah, 40.6%.
What is that
year
total? How many? Check like, this out. That, like 20 out of.
Why does that matter, man?
Why are you bringing it up?
15 for 36. 15 for 36.
Well, he's got to take them when they come to him like that. Like, hey, but look,
he was 29.2 in Washington. He was 14.3 in Milwaukee.
Let me tell you, it has not.
And then he's just like 40%.
It has not yet spooked defenses into chasing him off the line.
No. He does have to take him when his feet are set and everyone else is guarded. He does, because if he doesn't, then he doesn't have to be guarded. And there's some other guys on this team that you don't have to guard that much. We know, or at least if Steph's on the floor, aren't going to be guarded very much. So.
And he's just got to take the corner ones, right? He's not. It's the corner.
If your feet set, he's got a good look at it. Shoot him, you know, maybe not from the wings, but you know, sometimes from the wings, definitely not from up top. But he's never up top, right? He's never ever up top.
There was a couple times he brought the ball up, and I'm like, What are you doing? Like, this is your best finisher. What are you doing? It was just so weird. Yeah.
He's a unique player. You can't use him certain ways, and you can absolutely use him in very specific other ways. But if he's 6'3 and he can't shoot the three, that's
I don't know why you're saying he can't shoot the three, man. He's 42.9% from the corners.
I said
43% from the corners. Let's go. I told you, Slater.
Here right now.
Next All-Star.
Wow.
GP2 is in the rotation. I've said that. He's in the rotation. He's better than Kent Bazemore. And you know I was a Bazemore guy. Like, I just thought he did stuff.
Kent Bazemore not currently in the Lakers rotation.
Yeah. Well, you could just see, like, on a team like that where they need him to score – oh, Lord, it's terrible. It's terrible. Like, he was taking some end game shots in the beginning of the season, and it was terrible. That's not his situation. And GP2 is a better player than Bazemore. Again, and I'm a guy who kind of liked Bazemore.
Has Steph texted Kent Bazemore yet? Like, I told you. You turned us down?
You turned us down? Okay, let's go.
You chose this life, buddy.
I thought you were saying, like, he texted Andre after the first season he was gone. Oh, miss you.
Yeah,
miss
he ain't Kent. Doing that.
Miss you,
I just wondered, like, yo, you chose LeBron over me? Really?
Blazers, and then a 5-game road trip, which goes Philly, Indiana, New York, Boston, Toronto. Two questions. What's their record over that 6 games, and when does Steph break the record? What is your prediction?
6 games, I'll say 4-2.
Is Steph playing all of them this first off?
Yes. Maybe not the Toronto one, but I don't think any of us are picking Toronto as the record breaker.
I think he's going to break it.
Record,
yeah. I think he's going to come close to breaking it against Portland, but will not. He might get like 10. It will tantalizing, will make Marcus sweat. I mean, you might have to get that story out, but it won't happen. And I'll say it'll happen. What's the next
not
game?
Philly on Saturday Philly's, night.
No, Philly.
Yeah, Saturday. Philly. Yeah, Philly. It'll be Philly. He'll get like 6 to break the record in Philly. And I think they're going to go 4-2 over that stretch, maybe 5-1. But I always give them back-to-back L's. I just, in my mind, that's also, I'll say losses at the Knicks. Unless they sit him in Indy and play him the Knicks. But I'll say that he plays both, and they're going to lose at the Knicks, and they're going to lose at Toronto, so 4-2.
I'm saying 4-2 sounds correct on the record. I don't think he'll break it until New York.
Whoa, that's 3 games?
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it, he's averaging about 5 makes a game, so if he stays kind of on course, that would put it like early in the Knicks game.
He doesn't average. He doesn't get his average when he's going for records. That's one thing. MT.
His average jumps to like 8 yeah, or 9. Yeah.
When he's going for records, that thing
goes
out. Do
you think there's a chance he looks at the Indy New York back-to-back and goes, where would I rather break this record?
Yeah, he might. He might. But
yeah, I think if he sits a game, I think if he doesn't...
It won't, yeah, it won't be like
if he doesn't get it in Philly, if he doesn't get it in Philly, sit I wouldn't Indiana. Be surprised if he sat Indiana and did it in New York.
If he plays in a game, he's not going to go, well, I'm not going to break
yeah, it. Yeah, well, he can't. He can't not shoot threes in a game.
Yeah, he might sit. He might sit that Indiana game.
Because the truth is, he's probably lining up to break it in Indianapolis.
Oh, how bad! How mad would Indiana be if he sat that game?
He's gonna sit that game. I feel like he might sit that game.
Oh man, they would be so mad. I can hear that's gonna be the topic, you know.
And is the Knicks must be TNT?
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's Tuesday night TNT.
It's all set.
Ah, it's TNT. I feel like Mike Breen needs to call that game when Steph breaks the record.
Interview with Chuck and Shaq and Kenny afterwards. Now, I still think he's going to do it the first game of the road trip. That's what I still think he's going to do it. But just knowing that Steph
that's 16
elevates
over the next two games, that's certainly plausible.
8-8,
but
8-8, yeah, like 8-8 is not out of the realm here. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see what happens on Wednesday. But I don't think it's going to take so long. I think it's going to be pretty quick from here. MT, you got a record prediction here? You got anything?
Man, it's happening Wednesday at Chase Center. At Chase. No, MT, you know what?
Where's that story? We need that story.
It's happening at Chase Center because that's my life, right? That's what he's going to do it in one game, and we're going to be scrambling. No, so, you know, I do think it's going to happen in Philly. I think he'll get like 7. And then his brother will motivate him to get more. And he's done it. Like this year, he's had a couple of back-to-back games where he's gotten like 12, 13. I think, didn't he have 9 back-to-back games? I think on the road. Like, yeah, he had like 9 in Brooklyn. I think he had 9 against Cleveland. It is a lot to ask, but I could see a 9-7 split. But I do think playing against... Actually, you know what I think about it? Like, Matisse is tough, man. That's a tough dude to get 10 threes on.
Yep.
Yeah, you know what? All right, Slater, you got me. You're right. I'm going Garden. I'm going Madison Square Garden.
We're just completely Indiana.
You're just getting bypassed.
It's not happening at Indiana.
If you were Vegas setting the lines and you knew he was playing every game, to me, Indiana's the favorite. Like, that third game.
I just don't think he plays in Indiana. I think he's like, hey, back-to-back. And I've already said this before, the games are just piling up, right? That'll be 24 out of 25, 25 out of 26. So he's been played 25 out of 26 games at 33 years old, approaching 34 with his style of play. Like, you know, people are going to be hot about it, but it just makes a lot of sense to not play back-to-back.
The Detroit crowd was just devastated when he sat there. Not to the point that literally the biggest applause of the night, like middle of the first quarter, he walks out of the locker room and the entire arena starts erupting and everyone's taking videos of him walking to the bench. That was the biggest applause of the night.
But can you imagine Indiana saying, you don't want to set the record in here, in the birthplace of shooting? Like,
There might be some takes that day online.
There's gonna be some takes. There's gonna be some columns popping out of the Midwest, baby.
Oh my gosh.
You make me so eager to see all this. I love
Madison
all
Square Garden. He'll break it just to avoid all of this.
Yep.
Like, all
right, and then take Indy off anyway, right?
I would love to see him need like 3 threes in Indy and just play this complete floor game, passing, going to the rim.
You say I can't get twos anymore? You say I can't get twos anymore? Because like last year he got tons of twos, right? This year he's not getting twos. So yeah, I'm gonna go with my twos. I'm gonna get those efficient bank shots. So I'm gonna do floater game.
Work on my floater, work on my float game.
We'll see. Always drama with this ball club.
All right. We're going to get out of here. We will talk next week, probably after the record.
After he breaks the record in New York.
I'll talk to you from New York. They're actually going to take a couple days off in New York because they have Wednesday and Thursday off.
Woo! That might be L in Boston then.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Who do they play next? That's an L.
All right. Talk to you then.